I know you wanted to talk a little bit about this new welcoming community ordinance that was passed by the city council, obviously in response to what we're seeing in Chicago and Portland and have seen for more than a month now in Washington, D.C. So,
LA. Yeah, well, and it's certainly not a new resolution. This is something that, after doing further research, that was passed actually in 1997 and has sort of been expanded and edited. And in any case, so a welcoming city resolution, or welcoming community resolution, rather. And that's because of the immigration crackdown that's going on around the country. And really, you know, I guess the biggest thing for me in terms of just making sure that this is sort of discussed is, you know, there's a lot of people on both sides, I guess both sides of the issue, we want to say, and folks that think that Las Cruces or even any city or municipality or any government really shouldn't be sort of passing this sort of resolution. But in more than anything, a lot of it has to do with like how the city is spending money in terms of utilizing its local resources, right? And so it's not to use local resources to enforce federal immigration law, which, you know, I mean, if you are in my mind, if you, you know, if you're in charge of the coffers, then you certainly don't want to use your resources to, you know, implement a federal laws. Well, that you're not required to do.
Exactly. And as is often, always, not often, always the time in these debates, people get hung up on language. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, it's the word sanctuary city, which implies that you can commit rape, murder, mayhem, all kinds of things, and come here and we will give you sanctuary. That's what the term implies, intentionally. I mean, that was, you know, the creators of the term intended for people to have that meaning when they heard that term. I don't know, maybe not. Things get morphed. Language gets co-opted. I don't know how it... But anyway, that's where we're at now. Mm. And I think it's important that we say what sanctuary city means is that if you are a young woman living here undocumented and your boyfriend, who is a legal citizen, commits acts of violence against you, you would, if you do not have that protection, and he holds that against you, and it happens all the time. If you go to the cops, I'll have you deported.
Mm-hmm.
So you are creating a victim class in your community that leads to more crime, that leads to, anytime you have that, it attracts predators and it leads to more crime. And so that is the intention. It's not saying that if you commit a crime, we'll look the other way. It is simply saying that if you show up and report a crime, we're not going to ask you about your legal status. And if the person you're reporting a crime against tries to tell us that, we're not going to listen to that person. I mean, that's what a sanctuary city is.
Well, right. And I think that's the whole point. I mean, in terms of the resolution is that, again, that it's, we're not requiring city police department to enforce federal immigration law. And so asking somebody about their status clearly is a piece of that, right?
Yeah.
And then not cooperating with CBP or ICE or the like, again, because that is really not the... that's not the role that we're asking them to play, right? That's not... And that's really not, like, you know... public safety in terms of our local community. I just wanted to say, like, there was 2 hours of public comment speaking for and against it. And, you know, the council voted 5-2 in favor of the resolution. And so, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, somebody who's been an advocate for victims of sexual assault and domestic violence, absolutely 100% right. And placing another form of fear on them in terms of reporting is unconscionable. And so I really appreciate that the city, you know, reaffirmed their resolution, and knowing that folks in those situations or others can feel like that, you know, they can live freely here without local law enforcement being curious about their status.
And it was a 5-2 vote, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, 5-2 vote with Counselor, let's see, Matisse and our mayor voting against it. And right. So the others voting for it. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. I should have mentioned at the top that if you want to join the conversation, please do. Give us a call, 575-526-5825. The only time that's not going to be open is when we're talking to Pamela Court, because she's going to be phoning in for her interview. But especially in this first half hour, we would love to hear from you. The other big thing locally, I thought, and that I wanted to get your input on, since the last time we've talked, there has been the finalization now of the Industrial Revenue Bond for Project Jupiter. For the sake of transparency, DAISY is with the Empowerment Congress, which from the very beginning has been one of the most vocal, I guess, or public opponents
of Project Jupiter.
So just from your perspective, where are we at now? Where does it go from here? What are your thoughts?
For the ordinance itself, the project as a whole.
I assume that everybody knows everything. Project Jupiter is this enormous data center that they're planning to build in Sunland Park. Billions of dollars in investment, and it would have massive impacts on our air and water. So I don't want to assume, say, Project Jupiter and everybody automatically knows what we're talking about.
Right.
So go ahead.
Yeah, no, and I think the other thing, too, is just the data center is only half of the project. They're also intending on building a natural gas power plant to provide the electricity for the data center. And what we're understanding, right, that it's like a 10 megawatt.
Yeah. natural gas
power plant.
Right.
So that's definitely where a lot of the air pollution is going to come from.
And they gave an exemption to the state's clean air rules in order to allow for this to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And the governor,
they being the legislature. I'm sorry.
Well, no, the governor actually. She did it in an executive order.
I thought the legislature passed that.
Well, the
I mean, both are possible.
Right. I think it was a both and.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I think that the governor allowed it in her MOU, and then they passed something in a constitutional amendment that allowed that for microgrids, or maybe it was the other way around. In any case, so as of today, it's still sort of the industrial revenue bond process. It was passed right on September 19th.
Right.
And so it actually doesn't go into effect until 30 days afterwards. So right now they're still in the process of like waiting for it to go into complete, for its completion, I guess. But the company is, from what we understand actually, companies are already out at the site, sort of figuring things out,
well,
measuring.
Yeah, sure.
Right. And so in 30 days, that's when the industrial revenue bond essentially becomes in effect, the ordinance. And so then they can start making purchases, and then they can start moving forward with the project itself. So, however, there still needs to, you know, they still have to go through permitting processes, rezoning. I'm not too sure if the land has been sold to the county yet. Right. Because that's the process.
Okay. So you kind of answered my question right there, which was, from your perspective, what do you do next? And there are other steps along the way before they get to the completion of this process. So I guess other opportunities to have your voice heard is what you're saying.
Right. Absolutely. And so the permitting for sure is where it's going to, the rezoning and permitting and stuff, because that property is agriculturally zoned. So it has to get rezoned, and then, and the permitting, right, to start building. So we'll have to see that stuff. The other thing is that when during, sort of this 3-week process where between the inducement and the vote, lots of advocates were asking about the environmental impact study. And they were said, once it's approved, then we can conduct the environmental study, or that's when it's allowed or something that. Right. And so we've asked for the environmental impact study. And so still sort of to be determined where it is in that process. I do not know. I'm hoping that we certainly get something before the 30 days is up. It doesn't feel like, the industrial revenue bond should be approved without that process, since it's in the statute that it's required.
Right.
But we shall see.
The other big news locally, I thought, before we get on to the national stuff, was retrial ordered in the case of police officer Bradley Lunsford, who was convicted in the shooting of Preston Azay, I believe his name's pronounced. I hope I got Eze, and I'm never exactly sure how that, I think it's Azay. At any rate, this is, you know, it doesn't happen very often where a jury renders its verdict and the person gets a second chance. Obviously, the attorney general spoke out, was very unhappy with the judge over this, said it was devastating to the man's family, which I'm certain is right.
Mm.
I was surprised at the verdict, but I didn't listen to any of the testimony, and all I knew what was in the newspaper, and I don't know. I mean, it just feels a little bit like, you know, the old two-tier system of justice, you know, one for, in this case, you know, a police officer, mm-hmm. and another for all of the rest of us. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody else would have gotten a retrial, and I can't say that with certainty. I don't know what's in the judge's heart and what, you know, led to this decision, and I'm sure it will be appealed. I assume it will be appealed.
Right. Well, that's a very curious thought, too. Like, why wouldn't it just go to an appeal as opposed to a retrial?
Yeah. I don't know. This is where we need Peter.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyway.
That's very curious for sure.
Yeah. And like I said, I can't say it's wrong because I didn't sit through any of the trial, didn't hear any of it, so I have no opinion at all. But it just doesn't happen very often that a judge will reverse a jury verdict. And having sat on two juries this year in two different trials, it's very difficult to get 12 people to agree on anything.
Right.
You know, what you want for lunch. Nationally, obviously, we are going into the second week of the shutdown. This really feels different than all the other ones before. Well, it is. I mean, all of the other ones before were caused by Republicans trying to get leverage against Democrats who were in charge.
Mm-hmm.
This is the opposite. And so the roles are completely reversed. And both sides, I feel like they're struggling with that a little bit. But it seems like especially the Republicans, where one minute they're talking about how horrible it is, and the next minute the president is sending out memes with himself and Russell Vogt as the Grim Reaper. So it doesn't look like it's bothering them a whole lot.
Right.
Whatever pain is being felt by the American people, it's not reached the White House.
Mm, well, and do they care, even if that's the case, right? That at least that's certainly that meme definitely makes me think that. And the notion, too, that this idea is, well, you know, we're going to have a shutdown and then, the Grim Reaper, like we're just going to start slashing jobs again, right?
Right.
Thinking about earlier this year.
But the interesting thing is that hasn't happened.
That's true.
And
is true.
You know, Nancy and I kind of debated this last week, and I at that time said, boy, the Democrats are making a big mistake. And I still kind of think that. I don't know how this is going to end. But as we sit here today, it seems like the messaging is working in their favor because it gives them a chance to focus on health care, which I firmly believe is why Donald Trump is sending Black Hawk helicopters to Chicago, because he does not want to discuss health care. Please, can we please talk about crime? Can we please talk about immigration? Have you seen what I've done at the border?
Right. All the chaos that's going around in the country. We don't have time to talk about healthcare. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and I think this is, in terms of, you know, the Republican base, like this is just something that continues, I feel like, to, you know, the wools being pulled over their eyes. It's like, this is going to, this is impacting their, going to, right? Impact
well,
I
saw
life
something and today that if these tax credits expire, the five states that are going to be hit the hardest, number one was West Virginia, Wyoming was in there. They were all small rural Republican states that are going to see the highest percentage of increase, their residents, in their health care premiums.
Right.
And so that has to resonate. At some point, those people, regardless of how bought in they are philosophically on my team, they've got to feed their kids. They've got to pay their health care
right.
bills.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and kids get sick.
Yeah, the doctor. Exactly, yeah, exactly. So I don't know.
But has it changed the needle? You know, I mean,
that's what I'm saying. I do not know. There is no evidence that it is.
Right.
And the House, well, and let's call it like it is. The House is going to stay out as long as they can, because as soon as they come back, the new Democratic member is going to sign a discharge petition, which is going to require them to release all of the Jeffrey Epstein files. Mm-hmm. And so Mike Johnson is going to keep them. He's using this as a convenient excuse, and I would too, probably, if I was in his shoes. Boy, I'd sure like to bring these guys back, but nothing for us to talk about till the Senate gets their stuff together.
All because of Epstein.
All okay. because of Epstein. Files. Yeah, everything in the world of Trump, everything comes back to Jeffrey Epstein eventually.
And then, but you know, again, just thinking, going back to the Republican base, to the MAGA base, like nothing seems to move the needle, though. However, I mean, do we really think that this will be the straw that breaks the camel's back?
Yeah, I hate that analogy.
Okay.
I guess it's a good analogy.
No, that's fine. Well, what are your thoughts?
I don't think it happens all at once. Mm. You know, I think the camel slowly wears down until, you know. But yes. Do I think people are going to be angry and upset? And, you know, a good percentage of them won't know why or who to blame, and we'll stick with Team MAGA. But not, you know, there people are paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Mm-hmm.
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Right.
Is out there talking about, if we don't fix this, my adult kids are both going to see their premiums double and they can't afford it. And she, whatever you think of her, she does not come from money. You know, she was a small business owner. So, you know, yes, I do think that this will have an impact. I healthcare is just one of those things that impacts everybody.
Right.
Like you said, especially if you have kids or if you're older, single men in their 30s and 40s, I went for years without seeing a doctor. I'm not proud of that, but that's just the truth. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't need to, and I didn't. So yes, I think families and the other thing, when we start seeing the impact to food assistance as well, I mean, that is going to hit really, really hard in those small rural areas of the country, including New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's going to hit us. It has. And, you know, the state legislature, fortunately, the state's rolling in money. And so they have the ability to blunt a lot of that for a while. But, yeah, I mean, when you look at the list, especially on the Medicaid list of who's getting hurt the worst by this, we're right up there at the top.
We certainly are. Well, right, and that makes me think of the special legislative session, right, that happened last week.
Yeah.
And so they allocated funding for, right, to fill the gap, right, for health care and SNAP.
They did. They passed two bills dealing with health care. One of them covers the people who would have been lost in the waiver. The other bolsters the rural health care system. And, golly, I forget what the estimate was. I want to say they were expecting like five hospitals to close, they being the State Health Care Association, or I forget exactly.
Yeah, the health care authority. Yeah.
If this went in without any changes, that was the expected impact on rural New Mexico. And we're seeing that already. I mean, health care in New Mexico, even before these federal cuts, was in crisis.
Right. Absolutely.
And the state legislature has not dealt with issues like a malpractice reform, which is really a big sticking point for trying to recruit new doctors here. It just is. And it's, you know, keep saying it over and over and over, but it's one of the glaring weaknesses of our legislature. When you have so many people up there who have real jobs, they're not doing this for a living,
mm-hmm.
and they're protecting their interests. And so you have lawyers going up there protecting the interests of other lawyers. I mean, that's just what happens. And that's not the only thing. No, they did not. I thought the governor put, I can't remember what it was. Something else dealing with healthcare that I can't remember what it was, so I'm not going to try to explain it, I guess.
Okay.
But but overall, they passed food assistance. They had mm-hmm. I think 7 things, and they got in and out in less than a week, like 3 days, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Which is a successful special session.
I was just about to say, yeah, record time for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and it didn't seem like it was very contentious either. I know that the last one. From the previous summer was not.
When they went in and sighty died, let's open, let's close, see you, goodbye.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Where they said, we don't want to be here. This was definitely different. Yeah, and then it looks like 4 bills, House Bill 1, 2, and Senate Bill 1, 2 also.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that. That's definitely a win for New Mexicans. And it's definitely, I would say certainly a Band-Aid too, as we're going to be losing federal funding around healthcare. And so hopefully in the session coming up in, the winter, in January, they can do something more permanent, to repair the issues and really address, right, the healthcare concerns in our state.
Yeah, I hope so too. And it will be interesting to see, how much change there will be in the legislature.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, they certainly have a big challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, they have big resources in order to deal with it.
Yeah.
There are certainly other states that are going to be in more dire straits if none of this gets resolved in Washington than we are.
Mm-hmm.
And getting back to the shutdown, I just don't know. I mean, it seems like the stories about, we know the air traffic controllers are, not coming to work, and so they're having to shut down airports and all of those things that in the past the Democrats were out there highlighting and saying how horrible it is, and the Republicans were saying, who needs them? Something to that. I'm saying everybody had a familiar role that they
right.
played, and we got real comfortable and we understood whatever. This one, I don't understand what everybody's role is, especially the president's, who, one minute is saying, I don't want to do this. This would be horrible. And the next minute is saying, this is a great opportunity for me. I can't believe the Democrats gave me this opportunity. I mean, it can't be both of those things.
Right. And maybe he doesn't know either.
I don't think he does.
Yeah.
I don't think he does. I don't think the playbook that everybody understands as to here is how we eventually get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that applies this time.
Hmm.
And so I don't know how long this is going to go on. And it is causing harm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, the president seems like he has played his card. I'm going to fire everybody. I'm not going to give back taxes. I'm going to be the mean guy. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And the Democrats have said, okay.
Right. Then, yeah, show your hand.
Yeah.
But he's not playing those cards yet. So,
yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah, I've been thinking about that because actually next week I do travel. I'm wondering, I'm going to Washington.
No, that's a good, yeah.
I was like, okay, I wonder if.
Well, and I'm planning to do my music show celebrations next week on Open House at Trinity Site.
And it's open still?
As of last time I checked, it was open.
Okay, yeah, because White Sands is shut down, I guess. Yeah, so we had people wanting to go out there over the weekend, and we're not able to, so.
And that is coming up. I think the 15th will be the first time that soldiers go without getting paid, and the military, not just soldiers.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the pain points are coming up, the points where traditionally in the past, one side has said, okay, let's come to the table or let's give up.
Right.
I think the Democrats have decided we're going to make them give us these health care waivers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they will take that. They're asking for a lot more. I would guess they will take that, but Republicans are in the position that we're not giving anything because that will just encourage them to do it again. And I get that. I mean, like I said, it's completely reversed.
Right.
Republicans are making the exact same argument that the Democrats always made. Somebody's got a blank. And I really think when you get these, not only Marjorie Taylor Greene, but Josh Hawley, there are a lot of Republicans who are not happy at all about what's going to happen with health care in their small rural communities. So I we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Democrats will hold out on this, and I think we'll see. We are down to our last couple of minutes before we invite the candidates in and begin our discussion of the city council. Anything else you wanted to mention in this first half hour?
No, just what you had said about early voting, you know, and there's locations around the county. And so I just want to, you know, the work that we do, since it's really outside of the city of Las Cruces, just really want to appreciate the our clerk and our elections bureau to do that. Because actually, again, I have a staff that lives in Chaparral,
yeah,
but she lives on the Otero side, not on the Doñana side.
Okay.
And there's only two early voting locations, and they're both in Elmer Gordo.
Yeah.
So she says, I have to wait for election day. And then there's only one in Chaparral on the Otero side. So in any case, I just wanted to say appreciate early voting locations around the county, in Sunland Park, in Anthony, and then, you know, several in town. So it's just great that that's a priority for our clerk.
And we should say everybody can vote, even if your city council member or school board member is not up for election or re-election this year. There are still the bond issues.
Absolutely.
And everybody should weigh in on those bond issues. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes those get passed automatically without a lot of scrutiny, and that's
right.
Not a good thing.
No,
I mean,
yeah.
We should be paying attention to all of that.